Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
City News.
It's 17:30 GMT. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. I am Umaru Sanda Amadu. Tonight, I'm here with
Akosia Ochere.
And coming up over the next 90 minutes, Alan Chamantin's Movement for Change suffers major setback as over 6,000 supporters of the MPP who allegedly left with him decided to return home. Also coming up,
the Asobi State Council wishes to reaffirm our strong opposition the government's decision to rename the university without any consultation with the chiefs.
Chiefs of the Asogli State kick against President Akufo-Addo's plans to rename the whole technical university. We'll be hearing more on their decision. And later on Eyewitness News, the Doomsaw story. We're going to give you various voices from Ghanaians who are suffering from the state of power supply in the country. Here on 97.3 CTFM. And we also have business news coming up later. And the latest headline.
Independent power generators resist the government's intention to privatize ECG.
That's in 50 minutes from the City Business Desk. Eyewitness News is live across Ghana on a host of affiliate stations, including in the Upper West region on Tungsun 97.3 in Wa. Also on Jirapa FM, 96.1 in Jirapa. We are also live in the Upper East region on Tanga, 93.7 FM in Bolga. In the Northern region, we are on Radio Bimbila, 91.9 FM in Bimbila. In the Volta region, we are on Revival, 99.3 FM in Tajehu. In the Ashanti region, Focus, 94.3 FM in Kumasi. Orange, 107.9 FM in Kumasi. In the Ahafo region, we are on Hammers Radio, 106.5 FM in Gosu. We are also in the Bono region in Sunyani on Greener 95.9 FM. In the Western region, we are on Beach 105.5 FM in Takoradi and Sky Power 93.5 FM, also based in Takoradi. The show is also live on YouTube, live on Facebook. We are interactive. Join us with your messages on WhatsApp 0549-986-996. You can also send your messages via Twitter using the hashtag City Newsroom. My handle is at Umaru Sanda. You can also send your message to at City 973. Let's start off with election-related matters. It's an election year. You do know that. We are in the month of April. In a few months' time, Ghanaians will be going to the polls on December 7. Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo, the president of the republic, will not be seeking a re-election because he's constitutionally barred. He'll be stepping down. His party, the NPP, is sponsoring Dr. Mahmoudou Bawumia to be its flag bearer. The opposition NDC is sponsoring John Dramani Mahama to lead it into the polls. Now, in the course of electing Dr. Bawumia as flag bearer of the NPP, a lot of things happened, including Alan Kwadwo Chiamantin, longest serving trade minister of Ghana, quitting the MPP altogether and forming the so-called Movement for Change, which Movement for Change he said he was going to use to capture power as an independent candidate. Apparently, when he was leaving the MPP, he did not leave only with key persons like former Adenta MP, the Honorable Yao Boabin Asamoah, as well as former General Secretary Nana Hinin Toh. He also apparently left with 6,000 MPP youth or young politicians in the New Patriotic Party. Tonight, news is that these 6,000 people have done a U-turn, abandoning Alan Chiamantin on his butterfly wings. One of them, or their leader, was a parliamentary candidate of the MPP for the Adentan constituency. His name is Alfred Abebio Kumi. He's joined me on the line. Alfred, you're welcome to Eyewitness News. Apologies, we lost Alfred Abebio there. We'll try to reconnect with him. But these are things that come up in election years where you see defections, sometimes mass defections from one party to another. And sometimes you see a U-turn of these particular defections, like the instance that we're witnessing now. We're going to try and go back to the phone lines and speak to Mr. Kumi, who is leading this particular group. He was parliamentary candidate for Adenta, a constituency that the Honorable Yababian Samoa was member of parliament. Yababian Samoa being a very key member of the Alan Kwadwo Chairmantin campaign. We do know that he has other persons like former Madina member of parliament, Sadiq Boniface Abubakar, has joined him in that particular group known as the Movement for Change. He has also gone away with a former general secretary of the MPP, Nana Ohinintu. Of course, there are other persons who have also followed him, like the MPP parliamentary candidate in the last two elections for the Kpunkatamansu constituency, Hopson Adoye, has also joined him in that particular quest. The NPP as a party has said they wish him well and bid him farewell. No plans to bring him back into their fold following that decision of his to quit. Considering that he has done that in the past, now that we are hearing that the people who went with him are not staying with him, they are rather coming back, we'll go back on the line and speak to... Okay, I'm told that I don't have Alfred Abebio Kumi immediately on the line, but the national youth president of the MPP, or the youth commander, as it's called, is the youth organizer of the MPP, Salah Mustafa. He's joining us on the line. Mr. Mustafa, you're welcome to Eyewitness News. This must sound like very good news for you, but what negotiations did you go to have with these people? For which reason they decided to come back home?
Thank you very much, Omaro. Good evening to you and your listeners. First and foremost, let me welcome my brothers and sisters back home. Alfred Kumi is someone I know very, very, very well. He's a very good friend of mine. And he has shown that he's a true patriot, and we welcome him back home. I have maintained, and I've said this time without number, the NPP cannot be broken. The force of the party is not one that can easily be taken down. And true to my words, we are all witnessing the very strength that the NPP has. Today, our brothers and sisters who, out of one or two reasons, some anger, went away to follow our big brother Alan, have realized that he went on a wrong expedition and have all decided to come back home. It's a very, very good news for us and for me in particular, seeing all these young, you know, friends of mine, brothers and sisters of mine, coming back strong into the party. I am also extremely convinced that gradually the party is shaping up for the election. The spirit of the party is wide awake and grinding, and it is testament to the work that is being done. If you see around the country, the energy the youth campaign is pumping into the system clearly shows that the elephant is wide awake. The party's machinery, that the national chairman, the general secretary, my own boss, the national organizer, the campaign team fully behind me, pushing, and us on the field getting the work done is yielding results. And I am absolutely terrific that these brothers of mine have, you know, seen that the party is still their home and are coming back to help myself and an entire party to achieve the very, very big task of breaking the eight. When I say, Umaru, that we will win by hook or crook, you said it was in the connotation of if you won for the want of a good word, bad, you know, words that were using. But I maintain, and I told you that we are working very hard to break the eight, and it is yielding results. And that's why you are seeing all these things happen. And let me tell you, Look, Umaru, Alan himself will come back home. By the time we finish, you know, we are heading into December. Alan will leave. Now my big uncle Alan has gone into another expedition of AFRC or something like that, because the Afafanto one is dead, and, you know, the new kid on the blog, I hear it's RC something, revolutionary something, something, something. That one too. I'm very sure that my uncle will finally see that. No, the expedition that I went on hasn't yielded any positive results. The NPP is the true home that I belong to, and he shall return. Just like President Kufuor's campaign manager resigned at a very crucial moment, President Kufuor needed him in the 2000 election, only to return home because he noticed that no matter what, NPP, Fienifie, that is where the true spirit is. So I have no doubt in me that by the time we are up for this election, so to speak, our big uncle would come back home and say, let's resolve our internal issues and let's unite and forge a united forward for the election in December.
But Mustafa, for a party that is claiming to have done so much and planning to break the eight, losing 6,000 of your young persons speaks volumes about your agenda or your performance in government, don't you think? Even if these guys are back, the fact that they left speaks volumes, and it speaks to what you have really done for even your own party folks, not talk about Ghanaians in general, don't you think?
Well, Umaru, they did not leave out of performance. They left out of anger, citing, you know, the way the primaries went. But all of us in this party know that there was no period at any point in time that the contest was skewed in any direction. I have said, you know, that anybody who was on the ground properly knew that this was a no contest for Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia. It was a no contest. In fact, for the emergence of Kennedy Ohene Ejepon Akumpreku. And look, Akumpreku coming into the man and beating Alan and coming second in the delegates alone speaks volumes of how the NPP had shaped up itself and, you know, posited itself in the presidential campaign. So clearly, if Dr. Bawumia and my big uncle Alan alone, I am telling you, without a shred of doubt, Dr. Bawumia would have won every single region of this country. Every single region Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia would have won. Because I kept going around and I saw exactly what was going on in and around the constituencies and in the regions. And I was quite convinced beyond reasonable doubt. And I think I have told you this before in one of our interviews or so, that it's a no contest for Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia. Listening to what the grassroots were telling, you know, me and us in general, anybody who, you know, was in touch knew that this was a foregone conclusion. So I am, you know, convinced that the right decision after realizing that, no, we have been taking down a road that does not represent the true picture that we were being told, and that we are coming back home. And it is an excellent news for us. It's terrific news that we accept and welcome, you know, all of them back. They should come and let's continue the work. I know Kumi very well, very fantastic young gentleman, you know, filled with the spirit of the elephant. And I have no doubt that he's coming back to add to the fold for us to continue to push to break the eight.
Just out of curiosity, though, did you have this as a matter of fact on record that you lost 6,000 people to Alan's group, and these 6,000 people are coming back? Did you have that figure? Is that figure accurate?
We do not have such a figure, but in politics, I mean, anything can happen. So if my brother Kumi says that, 6,000 of them went and 6,000 of them are coming back, hooray, I am excited. I'm terrific. When I go home tonight, I'll sleep quite well.
You do a welcome back party, maybe a welcome back party for them.
Well, I'm sure we'll organize a welcome back party, you know, for my colleagues who have returned home. And we appeal. My other big brother, Yawabin Asamoah, my very good friend, Hobson Adoye, they should all come back together with my big uncle, Alan. It's not late. This is a party we have all worked for over the years. And I think that regardless of the situation, we can sit around the table and Georgia is better than war. And I think that all of us true patriots would find a way to reconcile amongst ourselves. And I think that is what my young colleagues have noticed and have come back into the party. Right. And it is well received. And yeah. I am, you know, happy that they are all back to the party.
Thank you so much. Salah Mustafa is a youth commander of the MPP, or youth organizer of the governing New Patriotic Party, speaking to us there. Let's speak to Yaobo Abena Samoa. He's with the Movement for Change. I was mentioning earlier that he's one of the key persons from the MPP who joined Alan Chemanting on his decision to leave the MPP and form the Movement for Change. YB, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you, Maritan.
If within 3 months you cannot sustain 6,000 people, I worry for your party. In 3 years, you may cease to exist if you are losing 6,000 people within these few months of existence, don't you think?
If seething as you are, you will swallow this paid for process wholeheartedly and accept and conclude that that's the case, then what do you think? Why would you even call me to respond?
Oh, it's a lie?
It's a non-matter. Adenda Kumi is nobody in the Movement for Change. And this is a process that has been engineered and paid for. It's been months in the coming. So please, 6,000, do you have a list of names?
No, I don't.
Do you have a list of names?
No.
So seasoned journalists like you, knowing that this is the season where Movement for Change is rocking the situation across board and has been noticed, the successful launch of our line, expanding rather than contracting. You have somebody, a low, low, low totem, like Adenta Kumi telling you he has 6,000 people going where you accept it. So already we have more than 6,000 in the Movement for Change who are capable of going back to here.
Why be attacking my person now?
It's not worth our effort because you shouldn't even accept it and run it at the headline. You shouldn't even believe this. Where you started is the reason why I'm asking you and questioning you. Because how can you believe this? How can you accept this?
So he has never been a member of your... He's never been a member of the Movement for Change.
Yeah, but he has been, but...
He was a member of your group.
Of course, he's been part of the movie of the movement. The doors are still open.
If he was,
he doesn't have that influence he's saying he has.
But if the frog
as
comes
far as
out...
As are concerned, if, it's paid out by the MPP. The MPP are tickling themselves very hard. They are struggling as we speak. We wish them an even bigger struggle because more is yet to come.
But why be if Adenta Kumi,
is not of the level where he makes any difference to us.
But if he was a member of your group
for a long while,
no problem. But well, the question. Let me put the question
many
through.
Many other people who are members of the MPP before.
Why be? My question is, if he comes out of your group, which group he belonged to, and says that he left that group with 6,000 people, that is believable, no matter how you consider
this.
Or
you want to believe him because he was a member of the group.
That's the first step.
That means you choose to believe it. That's what I'm saying, you are not being professional. Have you investigated? Do you have a list of the names?
You don't have a list of the people who have joined your movement either, do you?
Then why did you call me to ask him? Because it's no news to me. It's not useful.
When did
it's not useful. He currently works at the office of the majority leader. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not aware of that.
Thank you very much. So but, go back to the MPP, find the 6,000 people who say he says they were members of Movement for Change and have moved back to the MPP. In other words, he's assuming that they were MPP people before. Well, you should ask the 40 other percent of the MPP who are going to vote for Alan Chematin, who are just waiting for December 7th. On that day, today, they've moved back.
But
there's
lots
more to this than meets the eye.
So your view is that he was bought back? Is that the allegation you're
it's
making?
Not
that he
my
was...
view. I know for a fact that he's being enticed by money and that it is not a process that's a one-off. It's an ongoing process by MPP apparatchiks to try and entice younger people from the movement because they know that the movement is focused on bringing relief to younger people.
Mm.
The process of young people leading the movement, because it's a peer-led movement, is ongoing and it's viable and it's very powerful. And so young people who are part of the movement are being targeted with cash, with money. And it's a process that is deliberately ongoing. Mr. Kumi has been paid money.
Do you know how much?
He paid him money. I'm not interested in how much.
No, if you're interested, if a lawyer of your caliber can make a claim that someone's been paid money and not state how much money, then that's you peddling falsehood. And you know that cannot stand in any jurisdiction.
I accept you interview me. If you choose to state the falsehood, you have your opinion.
Okay, YB, you told us that the movement was built on convictions and that's why people like yourselves joined. If people who joined a movement because they are convinced by what Alan was preaching could be bought back by money, then it means your movement, the conviction is not convincing.
Well, you see, you want to keep me attacking your personality. Have I been bought? If one person has been bought, why do you want to expand it to the entire movement? It's not professional. Question the man who has been bought's morals. Don't question the entire movement. Question the man's conviction. Don't question an entire movement. Don't conclude about an entire movement based on one man's slippage. Because that person has slipped. That person is not a person of conviction.
Because there's no proof of your claim. There's no proof of your claim.
He is the one you should be questioning. Not me or the entire movement. I am sitting here. Have I slipped? Have I been paid? I'm a member of the movement. Have I been paid?
Have you been approached?
So if one person has been paid, why are you saying that the entire movement is made up of people who are not convicted or not convinced of their situation?
Have you been approached with money?
I'm not interested in that question because I'm not interested in following this process the way you want to.
But because you
it's totally unprofessional.
No, because
you are believing something that's a figment of somebody's imagination. You are seeking to make a mountain out of something that doesn't exist. What doesn't exist is that Mr. Kumi is peddling a falsehood that is aimed and designed to beef up a certain impression the MPP is trying to create. That impression doesn't exist. It is their own political creation, and it won't work. It is based on one person. And that person wasn't powerful enough in the movement or high enough in the movement to deserve the kind of exposure you are giving him.
Yes, because you are not looking at the larger picture. And it's okay if you attack my profession.
The larger picture is that
if he
strong
no,
and in alliance,
why be if he
is at a certain level where he doesn't make any difference
good.
To the movement.
So if he's a lowly figure who makes no difference and he's been targeted, how do you know and how confident are you that people at a higher level have not been targeted to? Because I just spoke to Salah Mustafa and he said that his uncle is expecting his uncle Alan to return by December. He mentions all of you by name, yourself, Hopson Adoye, and says he expects that all of you will be coming back. If there's a target like you're claiming, and which target has money to get Adenta Kumi back, how sure are you that your other members are not going to be targeted? And like I said, within the next 3 months...
I don't have to give you that assurance on the basis of what Adenta Kumi says. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
I'm surprised that you're treating him with disdain.
That's his business. Adenta Kumi has taken whatever he has taken. He has moved on. Happy birthday. Bye-bye. That's his business. That's nothing to do with the rest of us.
Is that not a cop-out? That appears to be a cop-out, your approach to responding to this significant issue.
Alexander, let me repeat it.
Yes.
You are trying to build a molehill, a mountain out of a molehill, and you are falling for a shenanigan which is as transparent as daylight.
Very well.
Somebody who's been pushed to do something. We've known about this for several days. If he had facts, he would have said worse. Because the original intention was to use him to attack Alkan's personality. He doesn't have anything on the movement. He doesn't have anything on us. He doesn't have anything on the rest of us. If he did, that's the approach he wanted. Rather, he turns around and says he's bringing somebody back to where? He doesn't have any authority or power within the movement to go beyond what he has done, which is to step out alone and be used as an instrument for nothingness. What is happening is nothingness. It's a storm in a teacup. It's not even a teacup. A bullshit. It's not worth it.
Very well.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. So spending professional time on this thing, you are going about it, is a bother to me. You're a professional. Don't spend quality professional time on something that does not benefit the people.
Thank you for your advice, but we decide our editorial decision. Thank you for speaking to us.
Pleasure.
That's Yabu Abinasama. He's a lawyer, a member of the Movement for Change, Alan Chamantin's group. He was MP for Adenta. The man who called the press conference today, at which press conference he said that they made a mistake by following Alan Chamantin, is Alfred Abebe Okumi or Adenta Kumi. He was parliamentary candidate for Adenta, the same constituency that YB was MP. He's joined me on the line now, hopefully. Mr. Kumi, welcome to Eyewitness News.
Good evening, sir. Thank you very much.
Good. Let's just get a few things straightened up. You said at the press conference that you and 6,000 young politicians who left the MPP to Alan's group have returned to the MPP.
Yes.
How? Okay. Do you have this list of these 6,000 people?
Yes. We have our database with us.
Say that again.
We have our database. That's how come we know 6,480.
So if I ask you to publish this database, you can readily do it?
Yes, I can readily do it.
And it's party members from where?
Oh, all over the country. All over the country.
And when did you
people
move?
From all over the country.
When did you move to join Alan?
I moved somewhere in September when the Movement for Change was announced.
And
that's
you,
when I moved.
That's you. I'm referring to you plural. Did you decide?
Yes,
did you call each other? And it's like, it's time. Adria Suyenko or something. Did you have an agreement, or you went individually?
So I would say that we went individually.
So how did you have a database then?
Yes, if you allow me. How the politics works. You know someone that knows someone because of a particular interest you have. You have conversations. You group with people that are aligned with your interest. So when interest is building up, it's all about groups. How groups are formed, it's natural. And it's usually because of interest or a particular interest that you all have. It's like a common goal, a desirable target set by a group of people with a plan of action. So the opportunity always comes for people to meet. Even in groups, there are groups. That's how come you be in a group and they tell you that you can't have a meeting inside a group. Just because you all identified something that you guys have in connection. Yes.
Okay, so you don't have information on who is who, but you have a database. It's just a bit curious. So if you can explain to me how you managed to compile that database.
So it's been a month and a half, and I had a call. Actually, I've been very quiet in the last 2 months in the movement. Very, very quiet. Those who know me, I can show you series of text messages, people calling me, asking me. But it was a self-reflection that started with me thinking about the decision I had made in the last few months, leaving my beloved MPP to join the movement. And I mean, a whole lot of voices, and I had to spend a few days to think about it. So out of the blue, I had a call from one of our guys who we've left now, and was telling me that, oh, they've organized a certain group. They want to leave the movement and go back to the party. We spoke about the reasons. Then we started having calls among ourselves. We met some of the people. We talked about it. And honestly, I was actually going to move quietly from the movement, but realized that when we moved, I mean, they saw us on camera. I've done a lot of communication for the movement. So we had to announce to let people know that, I mean, I go about and I meet people and they shout, movement for change, you know, that kind of thing. People know me personally. And some of them also identified with that in their locality, because of the kind of conversation they've gone about doing, people know them as members of the movement for change. So we decided that, yes, we the major guys that people know us, we want to come together and do a press conference and let people know that we are no more members of the movement for change, but we fully return to our mother party, our beloved party, okay, the New Patriotic Party.
What was your role in the movement? Because Yao Buabina Samoa gives the impression that you were not that significant in the group. What role were you playing when you were in the movement?
Oh, you know, sir, I wouldn't want to answer to things like that. But if they say I wasn't significant in the movement, then they shouldn't be worried about me. I don't know. If someone, why do you worry about someone who's not significant?
He's not worried. I'm the one who is worried. How significant were you in the movement?
Everybody knows my influence in the movement. It's second to none. I mean, at a point, I can say I was the face of the movement.
Are you serious? You can't challenge me with that. Face of the movement. Can you elaborate, please?
I mean, who in the movement did communication more than me? Who in the movement did communication more than me? Greater Accra, when we organized a conversation for Greater Accra and met at Nat Hall, who was instrumental in it? I mean, moving about, you know, we've done things, but
so you are an organizational guy at the base. Did you hold any position in the movement?
No, I don't hold any position in the movement. But I was a member of the core operations team. And the core operations team worked in a way that they assigned duties to people. I worked at Legon campus. You can go on Legon. And I have pictures to prove all those things. I have videos of what I've done. So if you think I'm not influential and you want to say I've had allegations of bribery and misconduct, and I go like, really? You mean misconduct? But with the greatest of respect for Honorable Alakodich, I'm not going to say anything because I see him as a father. If today you are spoiling my character, or you are trying to say things about me because I've left the movement, then it tells a lot that, so when we are leaving MPP, if people were spoiling Alan's character, would it be good? Let's be fair to the fact.
Okay.
I have personally sat down and I've been true to myself. I can't do this anymore because I believe that the New Patriotic Party and Alhaji Dr. Bawumia is the best thing for Ghana at this moment.
Okay. YB says...
I'm not mentioning anybody anywhere. So if you come after me trying to create allegations, I think it's a bit childish, very childish.
YB says you collected money from the MPP and that's why you went back. That's a specific allegation.
You should know that if I sued him for defamation, you have to come and prove that I collected money from someone. How much can the MPP give me? Or was he in the business of collecting money from people? Because he knows it. I don't know anything about the MPP. And who in the MPP is going to give you money? Who's assigned to give him money in the MPP? You should let us know all those things.
When you quit the MPP to join the movement, did you throw away your party card and did you formally withdraw from the party or you
did
not?
I did not formally withdraw from the party. You can go to a Delta constituency and ask them.
So you were serving...
The only letter I sent to Adenta was that I could not be part of the race anymore, even though I had paid. I had paid for my finance.
So you were a member of the Movement for Change and also a member of the MPP, technically?
Yes.
That's double standards or hypocrisy. I'm not sure which right way
so
to use
it. So at the point, you have to choose. And I've made a choice.
So you were not truly an Alan person then? Because if you still had one leg in the MPP, then you're not truly...
You know,
MPP.
The MPP is a bigger Alan. Family. I mean, Alan himself has said that you can vote for your parliamentary candidate and what? And come and vote for him. Is that not what his statement was? So I was interested in my parliamentary candidate, but I've sat down and the dust has settled. And I have to be true to myself. As a person, I have to be true to myself.
Did you call...
I mean, I can't continue...
Did you call Alan... Alan, whom you call your father, did you go to him to tell him that you've had a reflection and you've decided to leave him and go back to the MPP?
I've spoken to him. And
what did he say?
I mean, it's a private conversation. So I'll leave it as that. But I promised him, I'll never stand anywhere and say anything. See, everybody in the movement can come and spill lies on me. But I will never stand anywhere and dishonor Alan. I'll never. You see, they can say that. They can even say they give Ghana to me as Bible. I'll never stand anywhere and dishonor Alan. No.
Okay.
So they can continue.
There's one more allegation.
There's
one more allegation against you that you work in the office of the majority leader. Is that true?
No, it's not true. I've never even met the majority leader.
Not Osei Mensah, not Alexander Penyumakin, none of them.
No, I've never met any of them.
Last
majority
question.
Majority leader. Why am I going to meet the majority
That's
leader?
What YB said. He said you work in the office of the majority leader.
No, it's not true. You can ask, you can call Honorable Penyumakin and ask him if he knows me.
You think he doesn't know you and you don't work for him? You've never worked for him?
I've never even met Mr. Afenyo himself. I've never met him.
Okay.
I've never met him in person, or even from afar.
Seram sends a message from airport and says, I should ask you to mention just 10 names of people who you returned with from your database. Can you do that?
Oh, I mean, you saw, if you're asking me for 10 names, today the press conference, we had 31 people there. It's not necessary.
That's fair enough. Thank you for speaking to us.
Thank you.
That's Alfred Abebio. God bless you too. That's Alfred Abebio Kumi. He's a former NPP parliamentary candidate aspirant for the MPP. And he's now, he was a member of the Movement for Change. He says he's now back to the MPP, which party he once belonged to. And he says he came with some 6,000 others. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. We'll return with more. Please, before we go, Akosi has a story for us before we take that break.
A pro-new patriotic party group calling itself Patriotic Movement for Bawumia has urged the party's flag bearer, Dr. Mahmoudou Bawumia, to resist the intense pressure from certain individuals who are pushing for their preferred candidate to be his running mate in the upcoming election. Or the group, which includes top constituency, regional and national executives of the MPP, asserts that the flag bearer holds the exclusive right to choose his running mate. The group, whose convener is James Agrififi Ishan, address the press in Kumasi.
We have also read and listened to the discussions on radio for a certain people and organized groups in the party trying to force a candidate on the flag bearer, Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia. Those people are signing petitions and press releases to make sure that flag bearer bow to their pressure to elect flag bearer into their favor. That is the vice running mate. The new Patriotic Party members, who must have vigorously campaigning for our flag bearer, are at the crucial moment busily exerting all their energies on adopting various diabolic strategies and must be condemned. The group further advised those mounting pressure on the flag bearer to desist.
That was convener for Pro MPP Group Patriotic Movement, James Agrififi Ishan.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Let your voice be heard on Eyewitness News on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag Eyewitness News.
You all come back. Let's go to the voter region where chiefs of the Asogle State Council are re-echoing a total objection to the attempt of government to rename the whole technical university after Dr. Ephraim Amu. Or the alleged renaming of the whole technical university, which began as far back as February 2018, was met with disapproval from the traditional council, as the council says no consultation with relevant stakeholders were held. Well, at a press conference today, the council says it views the decision of government and the governing council of the university to rename the university without due consultation with the Asogle State Council, the custodians of the land, as unfortunate, misplaced and disrespectful. Togbe Ajilakle Housu, the 12th, spoke on behalf of the Asogle State Council.
The Asogle State Council views the decision of the government and the governing council of the university to rename the university without due consultation with major stakeholders, including the Asogle State Council, the custodians of the land, as unfortunate, misplaced and disrespectful. Whole Technical University, an esteemed institution in the public domain, holds a special pride of place in the Volta region, particularly for the people of the Asogle State, on whose lands the university is situated. We have a strong attachment to the university's brand, which is steadily gaining recognition both nationally and internationally. Our concern is heightened by the fact that the proposed name does not align with the university in any way.
Well, that was Togbe Ajilakle Housu, the 12th, speaking at a press conference to object the attempts by government to rename the whole technical university.
This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. Let's talk about the Labour Front now. Colleges of Education Teachers Association of Ghana, CTAG. That group is back in the news and is giving government an ultimatum, a May 31, 2024 ultimatum, to address issues relating to their conditions of service. What exactly is the problem? Again, Dr. Prince Obinhima is president of CTAG. He's joining us on the line. Doc, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you very much. Good evening to you and good evening to all your terrorist listeners I'm dealing with. My name is Mr. Prince Obinhima.
Oh, I was hoping that your PhD, apologies, work on it hard so that we can start calling you doctor. Apologies for that.
Thank you.
We thought it was a pre-tertiary institution unions that have issues with government. They have been in the news the past few days. What exactly is your own challenge now that you have also joined the fray of threats to government or ultimatums to government?
I think ours is simply a clarion call on government and its assigns to simply comply with the orders of the National Labour Commission after delivered on the 2nd of May. You will recall that the National Labour Commission gave an arbitral compulsory orders. And within the compulsory arbitration orders, government was specifically ordered to do 1, 2, 3, 4 things which are yet to be done. And we think that for almost 1 year down the line, 2nd May 2023 up to date, it's surprising that the commission, with all the powers it has, high court powers, to give an order, and then the orders will not be complied. You look at section 164, subsection 4 of the Labour Act 2003, that is at 651. It makes it explicitly clear that when the commission gives such arbitration orders, it's binding on both parties that appear before it. That's why on the part of CTAG, when the orders compelled us to call off the strike, immediately the orders came out, we met. Consulted our structures and then went back to work. On the part of government, they were asked to make 1 month payment to all the tutors who worked, extra in 2022 when we had to do all year round work. That is yet to be done. 1 month salary was supposed to have been paid to all the teachers. It's yet to be done as part of the orders. Again, the orders contain that the negotiator, that is being the chief negotiator, being the fair wages, should, as it were, see to it that the GTEC expedite action on the staff audit that it has started. So by 31st July 2023, they would have finished with the staff audit. And it was also contained in the orders that when they finish, they should implement it retrospectively from 1st January 2023. And that has also not been done. So you look at all these things, then it is clear that the government is not taking it seriously. We not wanting to take the nation Ghana by storm are coming out with this. Omar, you also recall that when we went on strike, our August last year's salary, August salary got frozen. In fact, when we met with the minister after our strike action, it was decided that the salary should be paid to the members, the locked-up salary. It was restored, but not without challenges. As we speak now, quite a good number of us, including my good self, which the association believe is victimization, or it's a means employed to make strike unattractive to members, decided to continue to hold on with the salaries of such people. And we think it's unfair. So you look at all these things, we want to share with the public. We'll be issuing bi-weekly reminders up to the 31st of May 2024. Even then, all these things have not been complied fully. Then we'll need to take decisions that will, as it were, serve the collective interests of SETAC members across Ghana.
So this is actually a court order you want to see implemented?
Exactly. That is the National Labour Commission's order.
So why don't you go to this arbitrator and tell them that the instruction that they gave has not been complied with, and have them issue another instruction?
A very sharp question. Really, we have written to the National Labour Commission drawing their attention for avoidance of doubt that the orders you give are yet to be complied with. And we are in Ghana. We know that when the NLC give orders, for instance, for unions to go back to work and they flout, they quickly run to the High Court proper to get orders to compel the union to go back to work. So we wrote to them that they have that responsibility to ensure that if they have to even go that length, they have to do. And the Labour Commission indeed wrote to us telling us they have referred the matter to the legal department of the commission for action. And up to date, that has not been done. So we have reached our witty end by going to the National Labour Commission.
When you say 31st May, you're going to take action. We do know that usually the last two of deployment is a strike. Is that something we should be expecting?
I'm unable to preempt what the decision will be, but I trust the rank and file of SETAC. I trust the structures of SETAC. That when we get there, the definition of the advice will be one that will bring resounding relief to the members of SETAC. That will impact possibly on our welfare, and I wouldn't be surprised if strike becomes an option.
Very well. Thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thank you, too.
That's Prince Obinhima. He is president, national president of the Colleges of Education Teachers Association of Ghana, SETAC. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. We are coming to you from our studios in Adabraka, in Accra. We are also around the globe on City Newsroom. com. Akosia.
Let's stay on education, because the Teachers and Educational Workers Union, TEU of TUC Ghana, has pledged to resist any attempts by its employers to stall negotiations regarding the demands of its members. Well, already the union has set a deadline for the end of April 2024 for the government to settle with SNIT and Tier 2 pension arrears. Well, speaking to the media, the newly elected General Secretary of the union, King James Azotimba, expressed the union's readiness to collaborate with the government to address their demands.
That will assure us that they will have the interests of workers at hand. Other than that, we definitely will have our position and then we will act on it. We will not tolerate any government that will take us for granted. Ghana is known to be a most peaceful country. We are all peace-loving people. We will not tolerate any thing that will disturb the peace that we are enjoying. In fact, they will be the greatest losers if they try that.
That was newly elected General Secretary of the Teachers and Education Workers Union, TEU, King James Azotiba. Now, a Deputy Minister of Education, Reverend Intim Fojo, has announced plans by the ministry to obtain financial clearance for teacher placement following the successful completion of their licensure exams. Well, this announcement comes in response to concerns raised by teachers who have passed the exam but remain unposted. Well, speaking to the press during today's monitoring of the teacher licensure exam, Reverend Fojo reiterated the government's commitment to ensuring the employment of qualified teachers.
Essential professional skills, literacy and numeracy. Now they've been changed and we've introduced papers that also test the competence subject-based competencies of the teachers that are going to be teaching. So this paper is a general paper, general professional paper that tests them around various pedagogies, around their literacy skills, and to ensure that they possess what it takes to go out there into the classrooms and impart knowledge and nurture talent. So we wish our candidates across the country the very best. I've had the opportunity to visit together with the chairman of NTC and president of Prinkoff, the Accra College of Education Center. There are other centers that are across the country that are also undertaking this examination. Wish everyone the very best, and we assure them that we are seeking financial clearance to post as many that will pass to various schools and communities where their services will be needed the most.
While the Deputy Minister of Education also reaffirmed the government's stance on maintaining the licensure exam, citing its role in upholding the professional standards of teachers.
These standards are the minimum standards required for any teacher to teach in any parts of the world. And for the past 6 years that we've been implementing the teacher licensure examination, it has lifted up the standard of teaching in this country. It has impacted on outcomes improvements in the education sector. And I always say that nobody would be comfortable to be on a flight when you know the pilot doesn't have the license to fly. But believe you me, the most crucial flight anyone or group of people can be on is a flight of education. So it's important that we are sure that the people who are going to be deployed to teach our learners are people who have the requisite licenses. Teachers are members of the noble profession. And I have not seen any profession in any part of the world that is as important as the teaching profession.
Deputy Minister of Education, Reverend Intim Fojo. Now, way to matters relating to health. The Ghana Health Service says Ghana is recording sporadic cases of COVID-19 infections among the populace. Well, the World Health Organization in May 2023 declared the COVID-19 pandemic as no longer a public health emergency, leading to many people lowering their guards in observing the safety protocols. A director of public health at the Ghana Health Service, Dr. Asiedu Bekwe, in a City News interview, urged the public to return to observing some protocols, including the wearing of masks, in addition to getting vaccination.
There's been, isolated cases being reported, but we don't have localized outbreaks. You know, in the past, we used to have like a school or a workplace getting a lot of people infected, but now we don't have that. But we are not surprised of this occasional case, because COVID-19 is never over. Until WHO declares the pandemic over, we will still be getting occasional cases.
Well, Dr. Asiedu Bekwe is Public Health Director of the Ghana Health Service.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Get the details. Every significant financial transaction, every market movement, and all the policies that affect your business. City Business News. Be informed.
Akosi Archer here with City Business News and Eyewitness News, brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. Let's settle for the details. The independent power producers, IPPs, have strongly opposed the government's plan to privatize the Electricity Company of Ghana. While the chamber fears that the attempt to privatize electricity distribution will result in service deterioration, tariff hikes, and also public backlash. While of greater concern to the IPPs is the potential for job losses as private investors may prioritize profit and short-term gains. Well, in a statement by its CEO, the IPPs proposed, among other alternatives, efficiency and regulatory reforms to ensure the sustainability of ECG's public operations. Well, it added that international experiences with utility privatization have shown mixed results, with instances of failure and renationalization due to service quality concerns. Well, let's still stay on the intended privatization of ECG because the Center for Environmental Management and Sustainable Energy has expressed strong opposition to the government's decision to outsource the billing and collection roles of the Electricity Company of Ghana to a private entity. While speaking to City Business News, the director of the center, Benjamin Nsia, voiced concerns about the potential impact of the privatization.
We at PEMSA think that privatizing revenue collection of ECG is not the best approach in solving the debt situation in the power sector. We believe that if there's going to be any privatization, we should look at a model that faces a total privatization of ECG. Because when we privatize ECG, especially with respect to revenue collection, we are likely going to create a redundant employment at ECG, which we face. We pay them as a state and also pays a commission to these revenue collectors. And that becomes a double cost to this company and also getting some revenue to offset the debt situation. So it is not the best of idea, and we think government should not go that way.
Well, the recent projection of a 5.0% increase in Ghana's oil production in 2024, Benjamin Nsia indicated that though it is positive news for the upstream sector, government must be cautious as the projection may not be met.
I think that any projection that indicates an improvement in output is a welcome projection in a time where we've seen prices surging on the international market. That projection and additional output will improve our revenue from the upstream, and also allocation of resources to very important areas of the economy. I think we should be cautious in projecting that our oil output when Talos Jubilee Fields operation come on stream or is commissioned is likely to put our oil output around 177,000 barrels a day. We at SEMSA think that is an outrageous projection because if you look at our current daily production, it's below 100,000 barrels a day. And if even Piag brings his report of the 2023 annual year, it's likely to decline further because you've seen that in the last 3 years, there's been about a 40% decline in output with respect to crude production in Ghana. So any 5% projection will not lead to an output projection of 177,000. Maybe the maximum should be around 125,000 barrels per day.
Benjamin Nsia is the director of the Center for Environmental Management and Sustainable Energy. Well, Finance Minister Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam has reaffirmed the government's commitment to avoid immediate visits to the international capital market. Well, this decision aligns with ongoing efforts to stabilize the country's debt to sustainable levels. Well, Dr. Adam highlighted that while the government is currently relying on the domestic treasury market for financing, it is intensifying efforts to boost revenue mobilization. Well, speaking to the media in Washington, D.C., Dr. Amin Adam said the strategic approach aims to mitigate the risk of escalating interest rates in the domestic market.
Of course, given that we're in a high interest rate, we should be worried. This is also because we do not have access to the capital market. We do not rely on treasury bills as a sole source of finance. And so if you rely on something where demand for anything is high, the price for that increase. So this is an economic. Okay. But we are worried. And this is why we are also intentional about increasing domestic revenue mobilization, so that we can reduce our financing requirements. So once you reduce your financing requirements, then your borrowing requirements also reduce. So demand decreases, and then we see the price also reducing. interest rates. So that's the strategy we are pursuing.
Dr. Amin Adam also assured that the government is prioritizing support for small and medium enterprises to ensure growth within the sector.
My focus is how do we pull resources together to target SMEs so we can address the financing problem and then also provide markets for them. We have decided to set up the SME Growth and Opportunity Fund, which is provided for in the law that established the Ghana Enterprises Agency. And we are going to pool resources from the budget, but also from our development partners, in order to target SMEs so they can grow. And as they grow, they create jobs. There are startups we want to accelerate our interventions in so that we can create room for SMEs to grow and recruit more people. And then also for startups to come on board so that people who have ideas but are not currently engaged can have some money to support. But also, His Excellency the President, we launch the program, and then we hope that between now and the end of the year, we can target 20,000 SMEs across the country.
Dr. Mohammed Amin Adam is Finance Minister. Well, that's it for City Business News and Eyewitness News. It was brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. My name is Akosia Ochre. Do stay with us. Up next is Point Blank.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
This is Point Blank on Eyewitness News. My name is Umaru Sandamada. Tonight on Point Blank, we're talking about the power sector, the doomsday situation in the country. Are you with power in your house as we speak? Do you have electricity at your office or home? Or as you drive through communities on your way home, do you see power? Are people having electricity? Are the lights on? It is a question, the big question over the past few weeks. There have been demands for a load shedding timetable. The government has refused to issue that through the Electricity Company of Ghana. So today on the City Breakfast Show, Bernard Kokuavle opened the phone lines for Ghanaians to call in and tell their doomsday stories. And boy, were the stories sad. On Point Blank, we are going to give you a flavor of a few of those phone calls that came through this morning, and then we'll do an interview about the doomsday situation afterwards. So let's listen to this conversation on the City Breakfast Show.
We hardly sleep at night, you know the sun is scorchy, and once you go out for work and they're returning back with the sun and the heat, everything, immediately you get home. In fact, when you get home, you ask those around, they will tell you that the light has been off since morning. And when you come back, probably when they restore the power, maybe after by 10 p.m., within 30 minutes, the power goes off. And before it comes back again, the next day, it is terrible. I mean, they shouldn't politicize this electricity or something, you know. I believe what they're trying to do is that once the election period is nearer, they start restoring power in order to lure people into voting them in. This time around, we shouldn't politicize this.
It's so unfortunate for me because at home, I also have a 3-month-old baby. And these days, you know, the babies that are born, they are born addicted to air conditioning. So when my workplace is off and it's frustrating, I come home to, I cannot sleep. You have to be fanning the babies for them to sleep. They close their eyes for just 30 seconds and they open their eyes again. The following morning, you cannot go to the workplace. I manufacture poly products. My machines depend on electricity. If we had the schedule, I will not let my boys come to work. I let my boys come to work only for that to be light off. At the end of the day, I have to pay 12 boys money.
Please, I am at Kuti, the satellite area. It's under Amazon district, but with the ECG, we are under Instagram. From Monday up to Friday, we went off from morning, 9 o'clock, up to around 4 p.m. Then to come after 4, up to around 10. Then to go off from 10 up to the next morning. The weekend was worse. It cost more than 3 times. And from Saturday to yesterday, we didn't sleep with light. 10 o'clock is off. Please, we'll beg them. We'll beg them. They should let us know when we are on and when we are off. I mean, this is something that should be common, something that everybody should be able to agree. They should tell everybody that your line will go off this time. Look at all the call that people are making, those who are using it for production. And it's really affecting a lot of people. That's what I'm saying. I have rashes on my skin. My wife has rashes. My children have children. They all have rashes on their skin. I mean, what wrong have you done?
I managed to set up a small food business for my wife. And because of the market, where the market is, so we decided to buy those leaves in bulk and store in fridge. But as I'm talking to you, a lot of them, they are spoiled. All those leaves and cabbage, those, all of them, they are spoiled, all because of this light up. And the thing is that I will not talk about my barbering shop because barber will come morning time, then off. Evening time, then they will on the light. By that time, too, no work will not come. That's what we have been going through every day. Last two weeks, I tried to see if I can do a timetable. But ECG decided to change the plan for me. I don't know whether they think they will be doing us favor if they give us a schedule or I don't know. I don't understand them. People take, around here, there are a lot of block factory. People will take car from Ashama, come here to cut block. Then they take the light off.
I had an opportunity last 3 years ago. My uncle and one of my siblings there. Do you want to stay in Ghana or you want to go? And my sibling think that you want to go. And my uncle gave me at that time 300,000. And what business do I want? I said I want to go into cold store. Today, even though my cold store is running, I can't even, if he calls me, Evans, why is the 300 shillings I've given you? I won't be able to recoup that money back to him. But my brother in the UK now is able to even come back, buy houses and establish business. I heard one of the guys who called and complained about cold store. Just last 2 months, I also lost a space of my coding room. The two of them cost me more than 80,000 Ghana cedis. So if a young guy in this country get opportunity to travel, Bernard, I had an opportunity and I wanted to be in this country and work. So I told my uncle, I want to go into a business. You need the money. The same money was the same money that was used to do all the ticketing for my cousin today in his own houses in a place that I can't mention. And I am here. The same money, I can't do anything. So if my son grows up and asks me, Daddy, do you still want to stay here? It's all mind-baffling. Just common timetable for us to know what we can plan out. I have to buy a generator, more than two, because my cold room is big.
Light off issue is very terrible. Last Saturday, we had it from the evening to the next morning. And if it was DM who had said that we should go and do our own plan or write our own Zoomto plan, her would have broken loose. But you see, sometimes too, I blame you, the media. These are the same people who led demonstrations upon demonstrations when we were in Zoomto, which were accepted that yes, we are in Dumso, and plans were given when the lights go off and when the lights will come on. Today, we are in terrible Dumso, and we don't have the plans. We don't have them. You could be there. Our gadget, yesterday, my sister called me. The TV is off. One of his switches are down. We are even planning to move them from there. So they are not putting the gadgets on again. So please, the issue is very bad. At least we know the problems. You were talking about excess power, excess power. What does excess power mean when we don't have power? You said we have excess power. Now bring the power. Now you can bring the power. Please, you guys should pick it up and be on their toes, because they should give us the plan. Even if they can't buy the power, give us the plan to plan. Maybe if I have to move from here to go and sleep with my friend, I know that today my friend will have light. Tomorrow I'll have light. So that we'll plan for our life. I'm standing in a fitting shop here, furniture shop here. They are waiting for light to work.
So those were the voices of Ghanaians calling onto the City Breakfast Show today, lamenting about the power situation and how it's affecting them and the alternatives they are deploying. We were speaking to Ben Adavle on the City Breakfast Show. Let's explore this issue further. Nana Amwesi VII is Executive Director of the Institute of Energy Security. He's joining us on the line. Nana, you're welcome to Point Blank on Eyewitness News.
Thanks for having me, Maurice Sander. Good evening to your listeners.
Good evening to you, too. This chaskele between the Energy Ministry, not the Energy Ministry, the various institutions in the power sector on this timetable issue, how can we find a solution to it? Because it appears strange and shocking, isn't it?
Yes, it does, Maurice Sander. Today, the power sector or the energy sector appears shepherdless. You don't see a leader who is standing up to the issues, accepting them as they are, and seeking to address them while calling for cooperation from Ghanaians. We have been asking for timetable for quite a long time. The PRC intervened as an arbiter between the utilities and consumers and asking the ECG to provide one. Unfortunately, the Minister of Energy conveyed to all of us, including the PRC, to produce our own timetable if we need one. And while we wish the country evil by asking for a load shedding timetable, today, very unfortunate, and I think that it is time we have a new leader, probably for the energy sector. But as we speak, there is no shepherd.
That's a very bold statement you're making. That you're saying that the current shepherd there has lost his shepherding skills, or he's simply disinterested and ought to be fired.
Omaru, You've been in this space for a while. The whole stuff being played out. Have you experienced this before? That you have, you see clearly a conflict between the PRC and ECG on one side, then the GridCo and ECG on another side, and these are state utilities. These are state agencies. There seems to be a loss of control in the sector.
Where should the backstop? The energy minister or the president?
It does stop with the energy minister. And I think that where we've got into, like I said, there is no shepherd. And so what's the use of the minister in that space? He must be relieved. Probably to concentrate on his, any other agenda he is bidding for. He must be relieved of his post. It's becoming too much, Omaru Sander. Is it not insulting, the statement that he made? Total disrespect to consumers. Are we asking for too much? For God's sake, I am a prepaid consumer. I have paid for that power that you need to supply me. In fact, you chose to put a meter in my house at a fee. That is also a contract in the form. And you chose to take my money in advance. If I'm not going to get the power, then just out of respect, at least tell me when I can have the power. But you don't look into my face and say, I should go and produce my own timetable. So bad a statement. I think that you must apologize for that statement.
There are people who think that the minister is perhaps remote. There's an ECG management that runs the day-to-day activities at ECG. They should be held responsible. In fact, the PURC believes it's a board that should be held responsible, and PURC has surcharged the board members. They have since challenged that surcharge, by the way. Do you think ECG and perhaps the MD there is a problem?
I doubt the problem is the minister. The PURC, a supervising agency,
a regulator.
The regulator providing that oversight over all the utilities, including the ECG, asked ECG to churn out or produce a load shedding timetable. Then the minister come and say, go and produce your own. It means that is the minister preventing the ECG from producing that timetable? And so if we have to talk to anybody today, we must direct our attention and anger to the minister. Unfortunately, the PRC is under the minister. And so difficult for PRC now to vent their anger in that direction. They rather go to their colleague ECG and drag them along.
There are calls for the privatization of ECG. Is that a solution?
It is long overdue. Long overdue. And I think that we attempted one form and we frustrated our own initiative. Omari, why do I say that? Today, ECG, through technical and commercial reason, is losing more than 30% of the power they inherit from grid code transmitter. And that is a loss. Some of these losses will be, factored into the tariff that we pay. It means that we are paying for somebody's inefficiency, you and I, to some extent. The next is that we don't have a robust grid, distribution grid. We don't have a strong distribution grid. It must be invested into. The next is that they are struggling to collect the bills, raise the needed revenue at the end of the value chain, and pay the other players within the chain. These are issues that must be addressed. We are struggling today as a power sector because of our 1.5 billion debt, impacting negatively on fuel supply and also on plant maintenance. Where are we going to get this investment into ECG? Well, we know that already that the sector is debt-ridden. The private sector have access to the capital market. The private sector comes in with some form of competence and efficiency because they are more profit-oriented and driven, and therefore they will produce or put forward all the technology and innovation necessary to run efficiently and effectively the ECG. But what type of privatization are we looking at? Is it a full one? Is it a partial one? Is it a PPP? We must explore all the options because each of them have their own pros and cons. I think that we sought to even do the PPP through the PDS arrangement where a concession is given to a private person, inherit an asset of ECG, run it for some years, and these are the key performance indicators. It was well fit. It was well embraced from the previous government up to the current one, just that out of greed and corruption, we lost that opportunity.
Mm.
And so the new door is open for us to discuss and see the best fit for us today.
Thank you so much for speaking to us, Nana.
Thanks for having me, Omari Sanda.
That's Nana Mwesi the 7th. He's Executive Director of the Institute of Energy Security. Nukunu Foga sends me a message and says Keta in the Volta region is completely off. and it is affecting my evening studies. That's what he has just said. Prince Henry sends a message from Koforidu and says, as I type, I'm in darkness since morning. That's a message that he has sent through. My neighbor, Raphael, has just sent me a message saying, Sander, the lights are out in the neighborhood. And I replied him, I no go come home tonight. That would be it for Eyewitness News tonight. My name is Umaru Sandamadu. I did this with Akosia Ochoa, production by Kobna Wilson, Beverly London, and Sami Wiafi. Technical support from Daniel Squashy. New media support from Edwin Kwakofi. We'll be back tomorrow at 17:30 GMT. Thank you for listening.
City News. We speak first. Reach our hotline on 0302-224959 and get interactive on Facebook, City 97.3 FM, and on Twitter at City 973.